I'm Bob Ryan of the Boston Globe and ESPN.
I'm Mike Lubig of the New York Daily News and SportsOnEarth.com.
And I'm Mitch Albom of the Detroit Free Press. We are the Sports Reporters. This is the Sports Reporters podcast. You hear it every Monday and every Friday. Yes, it is the podcast derivative of the TV show. It ran for so many years on ESPN. If you're joining us for the first time, glad to have you along here. And let us begin with NFL football, and let us begin with NFC football. And I don't know if anybody saw this coming, but I know we didn't see an 8-1 Philadelphia Eagles who had the week off. But then just behind them, 3-7-2 teams, the Los Angeles Rams, the Minnesota Vikings, who are using their third-string quarterback and don't want to take him out, and the amazing New Orleans Saints, which I think we should start there because they started 0-2. They're now 7-2, and they are racking up yards and playing defense that's reminiscent of the year that they went to the Super Bowl in their hometown. And Mike, I don't think any of us saw this coming.
No. They look like, Mitch, at the start of the season, they looked like they couldn't stop anybody. You wondered if Drew Brees was getting closer to the end than we had imagined. And now, not only have they won seven in a row, but once the whole thing on the Saints was, yeah, you don't want to play them indoors, but don't get them outdoors in cold weather. Okay, well, yesterday they went up to Buffalo. And Bob and Mitch, if somebody had told you before that the games were played yesterday that both Dak Prescott and Drew Brees would throw for under 200 yards, who would you have thought would lose? You would have thought Brees' team lost. Okay. The Cowboys without Elliott get 107 total rushing yards. The Saints get 298 total rushing yards and have two guys, Alvin Kamara and Mark Ingram, who rush basically for more than the entire Cowboys team. And boy, I'll tell you what, we know this from the beginning of time. If you can run the ball, you take so much pressure, even off a great quarterback. And we saw what happened to Prescott with no running game.
Oh, wait a minute, Mike. Call a timeout now. Let's take a 20. Weren't we all told by all the experts that running backs are now irrelevant about a year ago or so?
That's right.
I mean, I thought I heard that.
Well, remember, this is the Saints team that traded for Adrian Peterson, or brought Adrian Peterson aboard because they thought their running attack wasn't good enough. And it was when they got Adrian Peterson out of there that Mark Ingram took over and started saying, hey, by the way, I was pretty good in college, and remember me, I'm still here. And Drew Brees actually scrambled for a touchdown yesterday. Here, to me, Mike, what you pointed out is the numbers are impressive. The most impressive number, because I see Drew Brees, I don't know what it is, the Lions end up playing the Saints like every year, and I'm always following Drew Brees' numbers. Drew Brees, normally when you watch a Saints game and you look at his numbers, he's like 35 for 52 or 37 for 56 or something. And he's always throwing every single down. Yesterday, he only attempted 33 passes. He only completed 18. He is on a pace to throw the fewest yards in like 9 years, 8 or 9 years. And that last time he did that was when they went to the Super Bowl. So the point about running is not just the running. It's that it takes the pressure off of Drew Brees having to be the miracle man all the time.
But I still think, I agree. It's all happening. It's all unfolding before our eyes. And yet, do we doubt that if they do get to the money games, the key player on that team won't be Drew Brees? Because I don't.
Oh, no. But I tell you what, again, Mitch is talking about the 7-2s. All of a sudden, we're talking about the 7-2s in the NFC. But they have 10 teams over 500 at this point in the season, which is more, way more. I think it's six in the AFC. And you always look at the hot team, which is why we've begun the conversation today with the Saints, except, you know what? Somebody in Philadelphia is raising a hand and say, wait a minute, when did we stop being the hot team? And
well,
so
yeah,
we got 8-1. We've got the Vikings are 7-2. And Mitch, you referenced the quarterback situation, okay? It's going to get interesting and complicated because Case Keenum has done nothing to lose his job, except here comes a great comeback story in Teddy Bridgewater.
I don't know what you do there. I mean, Case Keenum, if you started the season, you said Case Keenum is like what you he's the guy you use when you have nobody else. Case Keenum was one of the arguments that you should get Colin Kaepernick. You know, you're going to go right with Case Keenum? You know, are you kidding? And look at what he's done. And now, we've seen this before because we've been around football, all of us collectively, you know, a lot of years. Sometimes those career backups have these just great years. It doesn't mean they're great quarterbacks. It doesn't mean they're going to have that year next year. John Kitna was one of those guys I remember had a great. You know, he was never a great starting quarterback. He had one great season. He played for the Vikings. He played for the Lions. I mean, he played for the Cowboys. He played for the Lions. But Case Keenum, and you're 7-2. Are you really going to sit him?
No.
For Teddy Bridgewater, who is a great story, but has not played since the preseason. I don't think you sit down a winning quarterback. I think you're ready to go with your guy if you need him. But this is a team that went Teddy Bridgewater, Sam Bradford, Case Keenum. They are used to switching guys around, and they found their guy. I don't think you touch him until you start losing.
No, I totally agree with you, and I think that the scenario is that you now have assuming that Teddy is health and is sharp enough, that you've got a tremendous insurance policy now for yourself for the rest of the year. I mean, you know, every quarterback and every player really is always one play away from disaster, and now you're covered a little bit more than you were. But I agree with you. You stick with the one who had, you dance with the ones that brung you to this far, and that's Case Keenum.
And you know, you look at the Eagles, okay? And next, I think it's next Sunday night, the Eagles play the Cowboys. Mm-hmm. Mitch, if the Cowboys lose this game, and I know they're telling themselves we can hang in there till Zeke comes back, okay? If the Eagles go to 9-1 and the Cowboys go to 5-5, not only are the Cowboys not going to catch them in the NFC East, the Cowboys at that point, with all those above 500 teams now in the NFC, get into real playoff peril.
Do you really think the Cowboys have a chance of catching the Eagles at all? I don't. Well, I think it's over already.
No, but
it's over already. They're three games behind them. They're not gonna double up what the Eagles do unless Carson Wentz is knocked out of the season. The Eagles aren't some kind of fraud. They're a really good team. And you know, if they lose to the Cowboys, I don't think the Cowboys catch them without Ezekiel Elliott. It was very obvious when they played Atlanta that they missed their running back. You know, you can say all you want about, yeah, we're a good team. First of all, they really missed Tyron Smith, and you saw that in the pressure that was on. How many times did Dak Prescott get sacked? But how many times did Dak Prescott have to be, you know, their bailout guy to run? He had 42 yards rushing, and Morris had 53. That's it. So they're not catching Philadelphia. And I don't – they got their hands full trying to get a wild card spot because there are a lot of teams – that are ahead of them or are equal with them that they're going to lose tiebreakers to. So I think Dallas is already in must-win situation when they take on and by the way, am I the only one who thinks it's weird that Ezekiel Elliott just like went overseas or wherever he got? Don't guys like to hang around the team and you know, root him on and all this?
Not if you're Adrian Gonzalez during the World Series.
No, maybe not. I don't know. No, that doesn't seem weird to you, Bob, Mike?
No,
it's
gone.
Does,
but
yes, the answer to me, yes. Yes, it does, Mitch. I agree with you.
He's out of the country. Yeah. He didn't go like to Fort Worth. He went out of the country. That's not weird to anybody.
In light of what he's charged with, I don't care where Ezekiel Elliott is. Hey, Bob, yes. How about my Rams? How about my Rams?
How about them Rams?
Yeah, they go. Look, listen to these numbers. There were times last year when I thought poor Jared Goff, I actually started to wonder, there were games where I wondered if he were still right-handed, okay? Yesterday, 25 for 37, 355 yards, mm-hmm. three touchdown passes, no picks. Listen, we watched Brady last night. We've watched the Eagles all year. How can at this point in the season we say anybody's playing football better than Sean McVay's Rams are?
Yeah, Mike, but those numbers were padded by the 94-yard touchdown pass. Come on.
Yeah, right.
Yeah. So, yeah, like he didn't put any air underneath that one.
I mean, well, once you get open spaces, extra bases, you know, the yardage is irrelevant. No, they're very much for real. And also, they're quietly playing pretty good defense as well. So the whole package is there. And if anybody isn't taking them seriously by this time, they're very foolish.
And a little note on that game for 1 second, if you had any doubts about the value of Deshaun Watson to Houston, all you needed to do was watch that Los Angeles game and watch Savage trying to play the quarterback position. And there's a team where, you know, people are going to make Colin Kaepernick screams. I can understand why they do, because they started with him and he played this badly and they went to Deshaun Watson. That was the reason why. He looked so overwhelmed. So he made so many mistakes. And you know, if you're a Houston and you're having this great season behind this electric new quarterback, and then he gets injured and you go back to this guy, it's clear he's not going to lead them to victories. It's got to be depressing. I mean,
no, Mitch,
sad to watch.
Here's what I was just going to say this to you. Tom Savage plays into the Case Keenum conversation, and it shows you what a lottery the backup quarterback thing is in the National Football League. Because sometimes the guy steps up and plays like Keenum has played. Sometimes the guy plays like Savage did yesterday. You know, I watched some of the Packers game yesterday, and finally, Mike McCarthy at least tried to see if Brett Hundley could throw the ball, and he did make a couple of big passes to save them against the Bears. The backup quarterback thing is fascinating, and in this sport, you better have one. And it turned out that the Vikings had more of one than they knew, and the Texans had less of one than they knew, because this guy was the starter before Deshaun Watson came along.
Now that leads beautifully into New England, who apparently operates without a backup quarterback because their bionic quarterback is just never going to get hurt. And what New England did in Denver, yeah, I know Denver's not Denver, and Denver is a mess. I mean, has a team ever fallen apart that fast from what was consistently excellent? Remember, the Broncos, and maybe it was all Peyton Manning just propping them up, but year after year, the Broncos were in it. You know, sometimes they were in it all the way to the Super Bowl, but they were in it. And Bob, you know this better than anybody, they were a thorn in New England's side. You know, that was the one team Tom Brady hated to see Denver on a schedule or Denver in the playoffs. What did they fight for all those years to get home field advantage so they didn't have to go to Denver, right? In the cold and in the wintertime. Last night or Sunday night, they absolutely looked like a second-rate team against New England, who ran all over them and passed all over them, including passes to Martellus Bennett, who we'll talk about in a second.
Well, special teams, though, were the real story last night. There were, in this order, there was a muffed punt that led to score. There was a kickoff return 103 yards, and there was a blocked punt. And so they were utterly self-destructive as well, in addition to being susceptible to Brady.
Hey, Mitch and Bob, you know who I'm thinking would be a perfect quarterback for the Broncos next year? A Manning. Didn't that work out well for them before?
Sure.
I am hoping that somehow Eli Manning is released from this misery.
From purgatory?
Really? Purgatory or hell, Mitch? But I am thinking that this man, and to people who blame this on him, haven't watched the season, okay? I keep thinking that John Elway might be thinking, wow, I wonder if Eli might be in play the way Peyton was in play a few years ago, and bring him in and win a Super Bowl with another Manning.
And speaking of pickups, and this only, you know, maybe Bob, you just take this for granted, living in the blessed heart of NFL football there in Foxborough. But how does Martellus Bennett go from not playing, needing surgery, to starting in a New England game, catching 3 of 3 passes thrown to him by Tom Brady, and suddenly he's back on a team that he won a Super Bowl with last year, when he was 5 minutes away from retiring or walking away? What's up with that?
Well, first of all, there were 28 teams could have picked him up. It was a waiver deal, but what's up with that is we're trying to figure it all out. He had this launch into this major diatribe against the Packers doctor, who he claimed was recommended or forced him back into action when he wasn't capable, and now he turns around, he's capable enough to do what you just described. I don't have a viable answer. I just know that this is the second time in 3 years that the Patriots have picked up somebody that they once had and got him back in a very head-scratching way, and the guy's made a big contribution. The other guy, of course, who basically loafed his way out of Pittsburgh was LeGarrette Blount, and now Bennett has forced his way out of Green Bay onto the Patriots. Patriots where, you know, he's just what they were looking for. Because and by the way, just spurring him on, Dwayne Allen, who hadn't caught a pass all year, finally caught one last night as well. So now we've got spirited competition at that spot to augment Gronkowski.
And before we get to a segment, every Sports Reporters podcast that I like to think of is Mitch's fun with replays in the NFL, okay? One more thing about the greatest football coach of all time. Guys, look at the Patriots. And I know they're playing the Broncos last night. I get all that, okay? And I know that the Broncos moved the ball pretty well. Look at the points the Patriots were giving up early. And I swear to God, Belichick was personally insulted by the way his own defense was playing. And it's like he went back into the laboratory, and now the Patriots defense looks a hell of a lot more like Patriot defenses we've seen in the past.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, that you're right, Mike. That is the thing about Bill Belichick that every other NFL fan envies, is that he can make adjustments in the middle of a season and in the middle of a game. You know, other teams make adjustments in the off season. You know, that they go get different guys, and it's always the summertime. Wait till the summer, we'll fix it up. He does it like, give me 5 minutes, I'll be right back. You know, and he does it in the middle of games, he does it in the middle of seasons, and they were skidding towards, how many times, even in this short life so far of this podcast, how many times has Bod talked about the terrible New England defense and they got real problems, and now, you know, they're sitting atop the AFC. Their defense looks great. You know, Brady's never going to get hurt, and they're absolute favorite for a Super Bowl again. And one last thing on Bennett. Let's call this what this is. Green Bay didn't look like they were going anywhere this year. You know, once Aaron Rodgers is out and you know, a receiver and his quarterback, once Aaron Rodgers isn't out and he's not getting the passes anymore, all of a sudden it's, hey, you know, I think I ought to have surgery. New England calls and they're going to the Super Bowl. You know what? I can wait on that surgery. Mm-hmm. Is it really any more complicated than that? I know he uses a lot of words, and Martellus Bennett has always, his whole career, has rambled on, and either he's doing it in rap music or he's doing it in weird interviews or posts, but he rambles on and rambles on. But when you break it all down, is this anything more than, well, I don't think Green Bay is going anywhere this year without Rodgers, but I can go play with Tom Brady and maybe win another Super Bowl. Wasn't I just in the end zone drawing a pass interference penalty that helped us win a Super Bowl last February? Hey, I don't mind going back there again. My shoulder feels great. Is it anything more complicated than that?
And I'm not being facetious when I say this. And just think if they had a pass rush. they still have no pass rush.
No, they don't.
They'll have one by like 3 weeks from now. Okay. Belichick will find.
One more thing before we get to Mitch's fun with replays. Okay. To use Ryan's favorite expression out of Death of a Salesman, attention must continue to be paid to the Pittsburgh Steelers, because it is looking like we are inexorably moving to maybe another big Steelers-Patriots game. They did not look great against the Colts yesterday, but when Roethlisberger had to take them down the field, he took them down the field, and they are right there with the Patriots in the AFC. And you know what? The fight for home field might be a big story over the last 7 or 8 weeks of the season.
And they do play this year too, which is great in the regular season. So,
all right, Mitch, take us to John Fox and the the pylon.
I'm going to hold off on my comments on the replay for parting shots. Now that you've deliciously set it up there, we'll have people hang on for that. Because we can't talk football without jumping into college football. And it's only because Sunday comes after Saturday that, you know, we wanted to deal with the NFL. But I watched every single game. It was one of those, okay, I'm staying home and I'm just watching all of them. This was a great Saturday to be a college football fan and to watch the whole shakeup. And you could begin anywhere you want. I mean, there were so many amazing things. Let's start with Auburn, because Georgia was number one. Auburn came, and I mean, it was a great atmosphere. I was so impressed with Auburn's offensive sets, and the I mean, they looked like they'd been working on a playbook for a year. To three guys over here, four guys in the backfield, a switch, a double reverses. I mean, they kept Georgia off balance all game long and tortured them, you know, not to mention their defense. I mean, the wins over the weekend were big wins. You know, they weren't last second overtime things. They were dominant performances. Auburn dominated Georgia.
Alabama did not dominate Mississippi State.
Alabama, right, but Alabama wasn't an upset. I'm talking about the ones that kind of surprised at the results. You're right. We'll talk about Alabama in a second. But how good is Auburn right now, and do they have a shot if they win out their big games? They've got Alabama. They probably got Georgia again. How could you keep them out of a playoff if they win those three games?
Well, the answer is they're in it. I mean, no, they have a great. Everything is contingent on all the how all the tumblers do fall. But there's no way you categorically say that this could be the year that the first time in which a two loss team could get in. And they certainly have the credentials, given that they have a good loss. A real good loss, with quote unquote, which is Clemson early, and then a hardly a ridiculous loss, which is a 4-point loss at LSU, and if they go out and they beat Alabama, which they could do, if they have to beat them twice, well, I think that would do it. So they could do it. Yeah, they could be in.
You know, it's funny because we have talked a lot about the Georgia, Alabama, who's number one, who's number two, but Mitch, when you said Georgia was number one, all I could think of was, but were they and were they really number one? Because first of all, it was a great tool for Nick Saban. But you're right; that was a beatdown. Okay, and it was a beatdown before we got the big beatdown of Saturday. I'm looking at the contenders, Bob, and I think that there is a possibility, because things got a lot crazier on Saturday, that we could get a two loss team this year in the Final Four. But I'll tell you who that two-loss team is not going to be. It's not going to be Notre Dame, because they didn't just get beaten on Saturday night down in South Florida. Miami threw them down a flight of stairs. And at 237 yards rushing for Miami, all the mistakes that Notre Dame, all of it, Mr. Brandon Winbush came back to earth to the point where Kelly even took him out of the game for a while. If there's going to be a two-loss team, it's not going to be one where one of the losses was 41-8.
No, they're out. In my opinion, they're out. They are OUT out. Notre Dame is not getting in because they can't. What's left on their schedule isn't going to redeem them. Navy and Stanford. No, I'm sorry.
Well, the eye test is enough. Navy and Stanford aside, they how many times was Wimbush sacked? Four or five times at least. The Miami defense was dominant. Mike, remember we talked last weekend about would it make a difference where they played? The energy Miami had. And I said, I remember doing this. I said, on paper, Notre Dame looks better. They don't make mistakes. Don't do this. But don't discount the atmosphere and the whole buildup around the Miami program, all the alumni coming back and saying, okay, we need to get back on the map. Once upon a time, we were the kings of college football. Here's your chance. You got all that going on a Saturday night. It all came screaming out there. The energy alone there was enough to beat Notre Dame, let alone the mistakes that Wimbush made, let alone the turnovers, which they didn't make going into the game. They just didn't turn it over. And they kept turning it over four times, sacks five times. Miami looks really, really good. And of course, the nice thing about this, all of this, for Auburn, for Georgia, if they still want to crawl back in, for everybody but the Big Ten, is that these guys are circling around one another again. They're going to play, Clemson and Miami will play. Auburn and Alabama will play. Yep. Georgia will play. They're going to all touch each other again. So by the time this is all done, the one thing we won't have, thankfully, is one of those arguments about, Wisconsin.
I couldn't disagree more. I think we're going to have a massive arguments because, first of all, I speak for the group when I say what we love most of all in this scenario, in this whole thing, is chaos, right? Don't we love
misery?
Chaos?
Misery.
We
and
want chaos.
Yes.
Okay. We've got three undefeated teams in the mix. They all could lose before it's all said and done. All of them. Alabama could easily lose out Auburn. And right away, Miami could certainly lose to Clemson in the ACC title game, and Wisconsin could certainly lose playing, what, Ohio State, I guess, in the Big Ten. But and then, are you kidding me? You won't think there are going to be arguments? I want to throw out Wisconsin. I want to ask you guys, is there any way to deny Wisconsin if they're undefeated? The answer would be no, right? No way.
No, Bob, but here's the other thing.
But what if they're one loss?
With the championship game, because they're going to have to play Ohio State in a championship game, and that'll prove it. Otherwise, the rest of their schedule, yes, you can, because they just didn't play the strength of schedule. They have one of the weakest strengths of schedule.
My favorite phrase about 2 minutes ago, eye test. And that's, I think this is why I love having a committee, because in the end, it's going to come down, I would hope, if I'm in the committee, my final determining factor is very simple. It's not easy to arrive at, but the question is simple. Who would I favor on a neutral field between Team A and Team B? And if you think Wisconsin, if the schedule aside, is good enough to win, if you are of that belief, then you would go with whoever you like. And if it's Wisconsin's that team, let me just tell the team that I think I think has a very interesting scenario, which is Oklahoma, because Oklahoma has given up 32 points a game, not in the last 2 weeks, not in the last 3 weeks, not in the last 4 weeks, not in the last 5 weeks, not in the last 6 weeks, and the last 7 weeks. They're averaging giving up 32 points a game. So I ask you if you feel comfortable in the eye test battle with Oklahoma against any of these people.
Bob, first of all, they don't care about that. The committee doesn't care about that, because I will just refer you to the last two national championship games, okay, where 6,000 points were scored by Clemson and Alabama. They love that kind of football. That's one thing. Let's convene the Sports Reporters College Football Committee today, okay? We know Alabama's going to be number one. I, barring a huge surprise, Miami's going to be number two. Okay. Let me ask you why Oklahoma's going to move up. So it's likely that the four are going to be Alabama, Miami, Clemson, Oklahoma in some particular order in three or four.
Yeah.
But wasn't Wisconsin's victory over Iowa, which had just tattooed Ohio State, better than Clemson's victory over a bad Florida State team? What I'm asking you is, why wouldn't Wisconsin move up as one of the three undefeateds left?
Mike, they're my fourth, and Clemson's out on this today.
That's what I think,
Bob. Because they've got by far the worst loss. That's an embarrassing loss. There's no justifying losing to the Orange of Syracuse if you're Clemson. So, and it was home. So I'm putting Wisconsin in on the basis of undefeated eye test and just because, damn it.
Okay, I got another question from Mr.
Hold on. I want to jump in here for a second, okay? Yeah, Clemson had the worst loss, all right? But they beat Auburn earlier in the year, 14-6, and we're talking about how great Auburn is, okay? They beat Louisville, who was nationally ranked at the time. They clobbered them. They beat Virginia Tech. They beat NC State. These were all ranked teams. Wisconsin hasn't beaten anybody. Their top non-conference team was Florida Atlantic University, okay? That was their big non-conference win. It's not their fault that that's the way the schedule lays out. But they have a terrible strength. I just listed a bunch of teams that I don't think Wisconsin could beat. Okay, Wisconsin's not going to beat Auburn. And they're going to have their hands full with some of those other teams. Maybe they win, maybe they don't. I am not convinced by the eye test of Wisconsin that they look. They don't beat everybody 50-0, you know. And yeah, they beat Iowa, and Iowa had a great day against Ohio State. Okay, that doesn't mean that Iowa is the same as Auburn. So I think you've got to allow for the fact that schedule. Now, I do believe this will play itself out, because they're going to have to face Ohio State, unless Ohio State loses to Michigan, and then I don't know what happens with Michigan State or all the rest, but they're going to have to beat somebody in the Big Ten championship that at least will be that quality opponent. And, you know, they play Michigan this week, next right? Saturday. Wisconsin. I mean, I don't know. Maybe Michigan upsets them. Michigan's got nothing else to do but upset people. They're not going anywhere. So I don't think that they're automatically in the top four, even though they are undefeated. I know it would be really weird.
Oh, there's no automatic.
Okay, let me say this to Michigan hater, Wisconsin hater, Mitch Albom, and Bob Ryan. Okay, let me ask you this.
A new identity for myself. Like, this good.
Wisconsin hater, sure. Okay, let me ask you this. If there is going to be a two-loss team, with all these teams bouncing off of each other the rest of the way, in what is, once again, a vastly entertaining college football season, what if Ohio State wins out? What if Ohio State wins out and plays the way they played against Michigan State last Saturday? Don't you give them a chance of being that two-loss team?
Yes, I think you're right. I agree.
Absolutely.
Absolutely.
I'm waiting for Bob to be.
No, I totally agree with that. I think
they
would have a very rational argument on their you could make for them. Yeah. And
especially with your question, Mike, of all the two lost teams, those two lost teams being Notre Dame, no, Oklahoma State, no, TCU, no, USC, no, Penn State. You know, not if you're not letting Ohio State, because, you know, head to head, they won. So and the eye test, Ohio State, when you watch them play and they play well, they look like they could play with anybody. Now, I know what their history is, you know, when they play up against the SEC in recent years. But and we can't finish this without Alabama. I know we want to get to the NBA, but Alabama was. I watched that whole game.
They're up against it.
They were up against it. Mississippi State had everything going for it. And, you know, there was that moment in the fourth quarter where Mississippi State had a fourth and short, and they were about midfield. It was late in the game. Game was tied, I guess. And they decided to punt it. And I said, that's it. It's over. You can see, and this is something that I always try to tell young sports writers when they come in, but, you know, what do you learn over time? What I have learned over time is that you can tell if a team believes they are supposed to win or not.
Yes.
And
yes.
That will manifest itself in the fourth quarter of any game, in the third period of a hockey game, or whatever it is. A team that jumps out strong, that's going nuts, that's burning all their energy at the beginning, but doesn't honestly believe it's supposed to win. Ultimately, that will come back in terms of a mistake or something. And Mississippi State looked like one team for 3.5 quarters and a different team for the stretch. And Alabama just counts on that. Saban, I'm sure when he's on the sideline, he goes, "We are Alabama. We will find a way to win this thing." And, of course, by the hairs of their chinny chin chin, they did, and Mississippi State has the moral victory about we hung with these guys, but they were in trouble. And I think if they had gone for it on that fourth down and somehow made it and then plowed in and gotten it, that could have been the upset. But once you give the ball back to Alabama, they marched, you know, the length of the field and they won the game.
Yep.
One other thing about Alabama, I became such a huge fan of this kid in the championship game because, guys, Jalen Hurts did everything he was supposed to do to win the national championship last year. Everything he was supposed to do, except the other quarterback in the game, was one of the great college players of all time. 10 for 19, 242 on Saturday night when it looks like they're going to suffer their first loss of the season.
Well, he might get his chance again. And who knows? He might end up playing Clemson again.
Now, guys, I don't know if you noticed, but
what?
The Boston Celtics have won 12 in a row.
What?
Yeah.
No. They and lost Gordon Hayward. Heard about That's it, impossible.
They had a big offseason acquisition, Gordon Hayward. I haven't seen his name in the box score. I don't know what happened, but he's not playing. And, they won 12 in a row, including and by the way, Friday night, Kyrie Irving was hurt in the first 2 minutes of the game, and they came from 18 down to win that game. And I don't know if you noticed this. Perhaps nobody's talking a whole lot about this. But well, I just
Bob,
thought I'd throw
right,
it out there.
Explain. They've got three
Here's the reason, very simple. They're playing defense. There isn't a reason. There are many reasons. But no one saw this coming, right? They're leading the league in points allowed. Their defense is good. They've only given up 100 points once so far in a world where scoring is way, way, way up over where, you know, comparison to where it was 5 or 6 years ago. And so Defense. They've got young athletes who are you know, taking up a lot of space. Good lateral movement. They work well together, and they're playing excellent defense.
Just touched on something, Robert. Okay, you said the word young. Okay, Jaylen Brown is 21. Tatum is a teenager. Marcus Smart is 23 years old. Those are three of their starters yesterday against the Toronto Raptors. And somehow Danny Ainge didn't just go out and get Hayward, and he didn't just swing the trade for Kyrie. He has methodically gotten his team younger and more athletic, and then put it in the hands of, and here I am, once again, a Brad Stevens fanboy, into the hands of the best basketball coach on the planet.
Also, Terry Rozier. Also, Irving himself is 25. You mentioned Smart. Right. Smart is the player of the longest point of service with the Celtics in his fourth year, and he's 23. So, yeah, they are skewing young. He went out and found a guy named Daniel Theiss from Germany. Certainly, I think I can safely say that among the three of us, none of us knew he existed on this earth a year ago or even 3 months ago. And he's giving him stuff off the bench.
Aaron
Baines, who was a backup in San Antonio, is giving him a force in the middle. And the other thing is, amidst some local controversy here about how good he is or isn't, Al Horford is demonstrating to anybody who's actually watching the game properly that why he gets the money he gets, why Danny Ainge wanted him, why he's one of the more interesting players in the league.
Who
he is
hates
one of the most versatile
Boston,
big men we
Bob?
Have.
Who hates Al Horford and why?
Well, they think he doesn't have gaudy statistics, apparently. Local radio talk made a big fuss out of him. Yes, yes, Mike. Local talk radio. I won't mention the name of the person because I happen to like him very much, and I agree with 90% of what he says, or 95. But one local host went so far as to call him Al Average, and that sparked a Twitter frenzy from Al Horford's number one fan and defender, his sister.
Well, you know, when the sisters get involved.
Yeah. So, seriously,
I will say this, looking at the Celtics from afar, when I see it, a team that holds its opponents to 94 points a game, that's the lowest in the league. And once upon a time, 94 points, we all remember when 94 points used to win championships.
Right.
Now that's the lowest in the league. I always look at it this way. When a team scores a ton of points, it's the players. When a team holds other teams to a lot of points, it's the coach. And getting NBA players to buy into defense is coaching. And Brad Stevens has to get the, you know, obviously they have to have the ability to do it, but it's more, the NBA defense is more desire than ability. All these guys have great abilities, and apparently Stevens is able to encourage defense.
May I ask a basketball question to someone other than Mr. Bryant? Can we just take 1 second, as we're doing more frequently, to talk about the team with the second best record in the Eastern Conference, even though you clearly hate the Pistons the way you hate Wisconsin football? Look at the job that Van Gundy is doing with Tobias Harris, Reggie Jackson. Of course, you can never go wrong with a Boston College man. Avery Bradley, Drummond in the center. Mitch, seriously, at what point, 10-3 now, do we start to think, wait a minute, these guys might be for real?
Well, it's kind of the same thing that we're talking about with the Celtics. They're playing defense, and a former Celtic, Avery Bradley, is part of that. And one of the biggest things is that Andre Drummond got sick of being talked about over the offseason the way he was being talked about. They weren't calling him a bust, but they, you know, it always starts when you can't hit free throws. I mean, guys are very sensitive about that, and he was just awful. These days, if you're in the league 3 years and you haven't taken it over, you're a bust. And they were talking about Andre Drummond like that, and I think he got fed up. And apparently he worked really hard in the offseason, and now he plays hard defense, he grabs a lot of rebounds, and he makes his free throws. And it's amazing when you can leave that guy out in the court in the fourth quarter instead of having to hide him, how confident your team becomes. And, you know, look, we've seen runs early in the season. Do I think the Pistons are going to sustain a 10-3 kind of percentage mark for the rest of the year? No, they're not. You know, guys will get hurt and all the rest, and the Celtics probably won't either. But these wins count early on, and they give you a padding for when you do hit one of those skids that you don't drop out of the playoff race. So, you know, the Pistons started this season thinking, you know, hey, if we make the playoffs, we're having a successful year. They're doing better than that right now. And again, I look at it at defense and coaching, same thing. Okay, before we get to our parting shots, gentlemen, listeners, you've tried all the meal kits out there. 30 minutes turns into 60, and all of a sudden you realize you're actually paying to do all the work. I've done it, and that ended for me this week now that I have tried Freshly. Now, some of you are asking, what is Freshly? Well, here you go. Freshly is a weekly prepared meal service that delivers fresh, never frozen, all-natural meals developed by their team of chefs and nutritionists. They're fully cooked, so all you have to do is heat them up. Each meal is ready to eat in only 3 minutes, so no more worrying about what's for dinner, no shopping, no chopping, no cleanup, but also no artificial ingredients, preservatives, or added sugars. Freshly is always fresh, never frozen, fully cooked, prepared meals that are ready to eat in 3 minutes. 100% all natural, no artificial flavors or preservatives, no refined sugars, no gluten. Developed by chefs and nutritionists as a healthier option for everyday eating that actually tastes good. The best part about Freshly is it doesn't take a lot of time to prepare or clean up. We're just heating up the meals here, and a dinner that doesn't end with dishes is always good. Try Freshly today and get $40 off your first two deliveries. Just go to Freshly.com/sportsreporters. Freshly.com/sportsreporters. 6 meals for only $39 for 2 weeks. It's Freshly's best offer ever, only valid for a limited time. So head to Freshly.com/sportsreporters or enter the code sportsreporters at checkout. Shipping is always free. All right, time now for our parting shots. Bob Ryan leads off.
My fellow Americans, and for all I know, my brother Canadians, on behalf of all the citizens of Boston and New England, I apologize. I know our good fortune in the 21st century is unseemly and unjustified. But as one of our icons would say, it is what it is. Yes, we have had a nation-leading 10 victory parades since 2002. Yes, the Red Sox were once again a playoff team. Yes, the New England Patriots are again positioned to win yet another Super Bowl. That would be number 6 in the Brady Belichick era. And yes, the Boston Celtics, who lost their marquee free agent Gordon Hayward for the season in the first 5 minutes of the first game, and who have played the last two games without Kyrie Irving. Oh, have I mentioned they also played one without Al Horford? Have now won 12 straight. I mean, we're sorry. We can't help it if we're beautiful. Look, we'll try to restrain ourselves, okay? Ah, but the Bruins are 13th in the NHL East. Does that make you feel better?
The Miami Hurricanes reminded us of something, especially in a rivalry game out of the past on Saturday night. Form charts never matter in sports. Just the big game you're about to play in the place that Dan Jenkins calls Saturday's America. This time it was Saturday night's America. It didn't matter that Notre Dame was rolling. It didn't matter what Notre Dame had done to Southern Cal, or that Miami had played one close last-minute game after another this season. Those close games, as it turned out, mattered on Saturday night. The Hurricanes had been through something and come out with an unbeaten record. Look out for them the rest of the way. They're a team with something to prove, coached by a man, Mark Richt, with something to prove. His old team, Georgia, isn't number one anymore. Miami might be before the season's over.
All right, now I get to my little rant about the rules, Michael. File this under Be Careful What You Wish For. Sunday at Soldier Field, the Bears were hanging tough with the Packers, trailing by a touchdown in the second quarter. A dump pass to running back Benny Cunningham sprung loose for a big gain, and Cunningham dove for the end zone pylons. The refs marked him out just shy of the goal line. Bears coach John Fox, maybe thinking he should grab a touchdown whenever he can, given the Bears' record, challenged the spot. Well, on the review, the refs discovered that Cunningham hit the pylons, but was actually losing possession of the ball when he hit the pylons. So technically, not only did he not score, he fumbled into the end zone, thus resulting in a touchback. The Packers got the ball. The Bears got bupkis. Oh, perhaps you didn't know that the refs can find something else you did wrong even when you ask them to see if you did something right on a replay. This is a bit like a cop checking your taillight and finding a body in your trunk. Yes, they are allowed to do something about that, even if it wasn't what they were looking for in the first place. The challenge cost Fox and the Bears a likely touchdown, and of course they lost the game eventually by a touchdown. Next time, maybe Fox should just pull the old Roseanne Rosanna Dana. Never mind. That's going to wrap it up for us on this edition of the Sports Reporters. We'll be back on Friday. We do this podcast every Monday and Friday, so if you enjoy it, leave us a nice review or just leave us a review. Tell your friends, and you can get it at Apple Podcasts or iTunes Podcasts or any other place you get your podcast. We enjoy talking to you. We'll see you on Friday. Until then, for Mike Lupica and Bob Ryan, this is Mitch Albom saying have a terrific week.